When the committee asked me to introduce our speaker tonight, I was so happy because I got to serve as delegate with, what's her name? Juanita? Juanita CP, whatever. No, Juanita. And I met her in 1995, and she is just a doll. Some people here may remember her. She spoke here 20 years ago. I didn't know that. So she's just older than dirt. As far as Al-Anon's concerned. No. She'll get even, too, believe me. When we served as delegates, Juanita kept a lot of different places, east and Texas west and something north and something south. And she said, Vicki, before we leave, you got to get up there and introduce yourself as Vicki L. from Virginia West. Do you know, I couldn't get that down. I just kept saying Vicki L. from West Virginia, and it was nothing, you know. Anyway, this is her third time here. And so tonight, what I'll do is introduce to you Juanita P. from Virginia West.
Oh, this is going to be fun getting Vicki, what's her name, back. Hi, y'all. I'm Juanita Poffenbarger. I'm from West Point, Virginia. Point West, Virginia. I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen, and my home group is the Happy Wednesday Al-Anon group. We meet on Wednesday morning, and we are happy. And if you're ever in Richmond and you'd like to come to a meeting, I'd love to hear from you and take you with me, because we really have a great group there. We just celebrated our 27th anniversary. So it's the second oldest meeting in Richmond, and for a daytime meeting, I think that says a lot. I did speak here 20 years ago. I was a baby. Now, Esther and Alice were still old. And they pushed me up here in my crib and took me up out of it and propped me up here. And I cut my teeth up here on this podium. And I'm as scared tonight as I was when I was a baby up here before they come to Virginia and robbed a cradle. And I am so grateful to be here, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share experience, strength, and hope with other Al-Anon friends. Without this program, I really don't know where I would be tonight. It certainly wouldn't be with a lot of people like you who smile at me and are willing to sit and talk. And I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me and for the lovely gift basket in my room. I really do so appreciate being able to come to Jackson's Mill. 20 years ago, I had three little children and a newly sober spouse, and I got the call from Esther to come and share my story. And the first person I called after I picked myself up off the floor was my sponsor, and asked her if she thought I should do it. And she said, well, certainly. I told him to call you. And I thought, well, I guess that pretty well settles it. So they made arrangements to get my crib up here. And I know, Esther. But I've got 45 minutes, so you just have to live through it. Oh, goodness. I came in to Al-Anon in May of 1977. And at that time, I didn't have a friend in the world. I was married to the second alcoholic, and that marriage was going bad in a hurry. We lived on a farm in Floyd County, Virginia, and if very similar to some places in West Virginia. There's no stoplight there. It's a wide place in the road. And I was 27 years old, and my whole world was caving in around my ears, and I didn't know what was wrong with us. I had no idea. If you would have met me then, you wouldn't have liked me. I hope after tonight that some of you like me a little bit, and that some of you who already do will still feel that way. And most of you would not have left me alone with your husband. So okay. You know, the big book says we share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. And I came up here with a dear friend and her husband. And just to show you how much 24 years in the program can change, when they stopped by my house to pick me up, she told him to look at my bedroom with me. That would have never happened 24 years ago. No, not in this life. Anyway, let me share a little bit about how I got to Al-Anon. I was here in March of this year and shared at the AA conference. So if any of you were here, I'm sorry. I told somebody earlier, it ain't changed a whole lot since March. So, and, you know, so it's going to kind of stay on the same track, I hope. Anyway, I just get overwhelmed, I'm sorry, sometimes with the gratitude that God put somebody like me in a program like this and gave me such blessings. When I was here in March, I had my sponsor with me, and on the way home, I told her one of my pre-Al-Anon stories, and she said, "You've never told me that." And I said, "Really?" And she said, "I think the next time you speak, you ought to tell people that." So that's what I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to tell you how I qualified for Al-Anon, okay? We were in a small town I grew up in, Covington, Virginia, and I was getting divorced from my first husband. I was living with the man who would be my second husband, and he was not divorced yet either. His not-yet ex-wife and my not-yet ex-husband knew where we were because we were living together. And I'm saying this not because I'm proud of it or because I think it's funny. It's the truth. And these are things that I would not do today and I would not live like today. But that was the story at that time. He had been away for a week at a conference, and I was really looking forward to seeing to him. And we had plans to go out to dinner, and being the good, untreated Al-Anon that I was, you know what I bought him before I met up with him that night? A bottle! And I was waiting on him, happy little person, had the bottle, you know. His not to soon ex-wife riding up down the street, my not yet ex-husband riding up down the street, and I'm waiting with a bottle. And so off we go. We're going out to dinner in another town because we want to leave the exes, you know. Oh, and I had two little children and he had one at that time. So off we go. And being the untreated Al-Anon that I was, I didn't realize I couldn't drink with him. Novel idea, isn't it? And I hadn't eaten because we were going out to dinner, and so he's knocking down the blackjack, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I always could hold my own. I hated to be left out of anything, so I was going to give it a shot, and I gave it a college try. Well, we got about 12 or 15 miles, and he almost sideswiped a bridge. And I said, whoa, I said, "You're just too drunk. You got to stop. You got to let me drive." And I'd get out and get around the car like this and get under the wheel. Oh, and I got to tell you this. This was his new car. This makes it even funnier. Because the not-yet ex-wife had got the other car in the settlement, okay? So this is his new car. He's been away a week. And we're driving down the road. We get about 3 or 4 more miles, and I veer off the road. And I overcorrect and veer back on the road. And I go all the way across the road and go off the shoulder on the wrong side of the road. And when I went off the shoulder, I lost control of the car, and we rolled over about 4 times. Both our heads hit the windshield. The next day I really did look like I'd been in a car wreck. I was black and blue from hitting, you know, 4 times, boom. It was really attractive. And he cut his head real bad, real bad. And guess what happened? They sent a newspaper reporter out, and they took a picture of the car laying on its side on 220 and put our names with it on the front page of the Clifton Forge paper. So that is one of the ways I qualified for Al-Anon. I could tell you a lot more, which are just as insane and just as sick, but that's the one I told my sponsor going home, and I will tell her that I shared that with you. So I needed Al-Anon the day I was born. I grew up with alcoholism. My father was a recovering alcoholic. We were a small, close family. I never saw my father drink. He stopped drinking before he and my mother married. But I always knew, because he talked about his alcoholism growing up. But the part of the story I didn't listen to was the alcoholism part. What I listened to and what I made up in my mind and carried with me was the fact that he loved my mother and he stopped drinking for her. Now, they never told me that. That was never mentioned. But that's what I took, and that's what I made up, and that was what I believed. It's kind of like a soap opera, you know? It's not really there. You just have to kind of make it up. And I did a lot of that. Because like many people in Al-Anon, I made things up as I went along, and I lived out of my head. Whatever it was today was whatever it was. I was a small town girl, was Girl Scout, went to Little Methodist Church every Sunday. Daddy sat between me and my sister. You know, we went everywhere together. We walked. We just had a little happy family. But I was not a happy camper. I was a rule breaker. I was a rebel. I was a loudmouth. I was obnoxious. I was pushy, arrogant, prideful. Let's see, how many more characters did... And my sister was the good one. She was the good child with the glasses. And I was the firstborn, and I was cutting a new path everywhere I went. And I think probably there before I graduated from high school, my mother just got out of the way, because I was pretty much like a freight train of self-will. I was going my way, and that was the way it was going to be, and that settled that. Just to show you what kind of rule breaker I was, most people get engaged and, you know, get the ring and the date and get married and settle down, and then they start their family. Well, I kind of reversed those orders, because I didn't want to wait. So at 17, we started our family. And I didn't have a ring, and I didn't have a date, and I wasn't married. And I had a boy from, you'll never guess where, wild, wonderful West Virginia. That's right. Right out of Ray Mail. And yeah, he was. He was having blackouts when I met him. Some people, that would be a clue. For some of us untreated Al-Anons, pow, right over the head. You know, it's like, I can help this boy. Yes. Yes, he, and see, I had the idea that if he loves me, he will stop. Right. Ah, see, I wasn't the only one. So we proceeded to have an extremely violent and tempestuous, angry relationship. Two kids that shouldn't have ever been married, had two kids together, and a disaster of a marriage. There was physical violence in our home, and I am the one that would be the one who was guilty of starting it. He would be passed out, and I got mad one day because he wouldn't get up and go to work, and, you know, shook him a little harder. Don't go home and try this, okay? And shook him a little harder, and then when he didn't wake up, I hauled off and slapped him. It wasn't pretty. My brother-in-law had to get him off of me. But who started it? And see, I didn't tell anybody that part of it for years. I let everybody think that he's the one that beat me that night. And if I hadn't done what I did, that would have never happened. We got divorced, and I thought, cool, this is it. You know, I'm 22 years old. I still have some looks, you know. I'll set out and, you know, I got rid of my problem. And the only difference in me was that I was divorced and crazy instead of married and crazy. That was only, I had a piece of paper that says, look out, world, there's another loose one. Okay, that's all. I didn't have nothing that made me inside. Right. I just had a piece of paper that said, you know, there's another one on the loose. You know, be careful of us. I tell you, we're scary. You can't smell us. You know? You can't. See, those of you in the other program, we can find you. You know? We can smell you over the phone. See? You can't smell us. So we're really scary. We really are. Anyway, so I'm out on the loose, you know, doing my own thing, gonna date, because I didn't really date that much. I got married right straight out of high school, and, you know, the baby comes along a few months later. And so I'm dating, and I meet this fella, and he's married, and I said, listen, I got enough problems, you know, why don't you, well, lo and behold, he left his wife, and again, I'm not saying this because I'm proud of it, because there was a little family that was hurt because of things I did and things I allowed, but he swore that, you know, I was the right one, I was the one that he'd been looking for, and see, one of the things, again, that I did in between my first marriage and my second marriage was I made a list of all the things I wouldn't marry again. Oh, I mean, this is so insightful. It's so profound. Doug's going to love this. I would never marry anybody that played golf. Sorry, Gary. Sorry, Doug. At least y'all were safe, see? Okay, because my first husband played golf, and he was a gambler. I mean, the man would lose his paycheck before he got out of the gate at the paper mill, okay? They'd bet the numbers on the paycheck, who had the best hand, lose the whole damn, lose the whole paycheck before he ever got out of the gate, okay? And he'd play golf, and of course they'd play $5, you know, a hole, and hell, we didn't have $5, you know, so I'd never marry a man who belonged to the moose. You got to draw the line somewhere. And, you know, in West Virginia, you know, they have the ramp, the ramp days, the ramp festival. I don't know. Do you have a ramp queen? I hope not. Anyway. If you don't know what ramps are, you need to talk to somebody in West Virginia. Oh, or just sit close to them. That'll do it. I would never marry a man who played cards. That was another one. But I never, on this list, this very profound list, never once put down, I would never marry a man who drank too much. So, this wonderful, tall, good-looking fellow with his drop-dead blue eyes had just this teeny, teeny, little bitty problem. He drank too much. But it was his mother's fault. And his current wife did not understand him. But I, on the other hand, did. Okay? And so we proceeded, like I say, you know the story. And he held off pretty good for a year or two, and then the drinking picked up, and it picked up, and little by little we isolated, I isolated. The second husband was not a social drinker. He drank liquor, he drank to get drunk, he drank hard and fast, he didn't go anywhere to have fun. By the time he got to AA in 1978, when he was 27 years old, he was drinking Listerine in the morning until he quit puking, and he puked up blood, and it looked, our bathroom just looked awful, and I don't know how much longer he could have gone on like that. He served two tours of duty in Vietnam, and I, in all of my great, profound understanding of all of what's going on with us, determined that that's what was wrong with him, that he had some kind of trauma in Nam, and if he would just tell me about it, we could talk our way through it. Jeez. Of course, this would mean I would catch him drawing a sober breath, but, I was sure I could fix this. So I tried and tried, and that didn't work. So I realized one day that in Salem, Virginia, there's a VA hospital, and they help veterans, and he's a veteran. So it clicked in my head, let's call them. So I did. Talked to a psychiatrist, and he said, well, get him in here. I'll be glad to talk to him. We've got a program here. So, you give an untreated Al-Anon a mission like that, we will bust a gut, won't we? I would have drove him myself. Right? So I'm waiting for him when he gets in that night. And I tell him, I found a place we can go get help. And he said, where? And I said, the VA hospital. He said, I'm not going there. And I said, why? This nice man said he would help us. He said, they keep secret records on you. And I said, secret records? I've never heard of such a thing. He said, see? I told you they were secret. See? God. And this is funnier. I believed him. this is so pathetic. I believed him. He said, I'll never go there. I'll never get a job the rest of my life. So, you cross that one off and you keep staggering on and you keep staggering on. We had a daughter together because we thought that will help things. Yeah, right. And this poor little thing was born into the worst that you could almost put two parents' lives in. And finally one day, and other than the grace of God, because I was not a churchgoer, I was an agnostic, I was really an obnoxious agnostic, because I thought if there was a God, he was for old women and sick people, and I was neither one. So just get out of my way. So it wasn't like I was calling church for help, okay? One day, I pick up the phone book, and I'm looking for help. And I call AA. Now, why, other than the grace of God, would a sick, blind, lost, completely confused human being call AA? You'll love this. They didn't answer. The VA don't work and AA don't answer. What is a girl to do, Well, again, other than the hand of God moving, I don't know. because then you know what the next name was under AA, Al-Anon Family Groups. And I called. We lived in Floyd. I was 40-some miles from my first meeting. I had 3 children under the age of 9, and I went by myself. So when people say, I don't have time, I live too far, I got too many kids, I don't have no money, I go, don't wash with me, sister. I was 27 years old, and I was scared to death. And I sat there outside that meeting on Mountain Avenue in Roanoke in May of 1977 and couldn't decide whether I was more scared to sit there or more scared to go home. And I had this little voice say, your daddy didn't raise no coward, go in. And I went in all by myself. And at that very first meeting, I knew that I would be back. I didn't know anything else. When they stood up to say the Serenity Prayer and held hands, I jumped. I was so startled because people touched me. I had not been with people. Nobody had touched me in a long time. And then I stood there and I tried to remember the words to the Lord's Prayer. I'm a Methodist girl. We say it every Sunday. My daddy taught me that prayer. I didn't know the words anymore. And you know what hit me? My God, how much of me I'd lost. Not what am I going to do about him? How am I going to get him fixed? What am I going to tell him? Because I sure didn't tell him where I was. It just crashed in. How much of me was gone. And I didn't know what happened. But when I read the literature and it said alcoholism was a disease, I latched on to it. There's never been a doubt in my mind that it was alcoholism. When the second step said you need to be restored to sanity, I know a lot of us Al-Anons really gag on that I word. And me, I paid the bill. I was the good one. I went to church. I dressed the children. I told the lies. I balanced a checkbook. You know, I squirreled money. You know, yeah, I'm sure you did. And what was going on in your head the whole time? I didn't have any problem with the word insane. I knew. When I read the literature, it was like somebody followed me around and wrote down all the crazy shit. Excuse me. Back up that time. Sorry. The Lord's still working on me with the mouth thing. Anyway, it was like y'all followed me around and wrote down what I did. It really scared me because I didn't know how you could know that much about me when you'd never seen me. And all those pamphlets laying out on that table, every single one of them just wrote down my life. And I couldn't believe it. So I went home that day thinking, I don't know what they have, but I'm going back. And I promised God that day that if he would get me so, first of all, I could talk to people because my language was so foul. I could embarrass most of the men in here, how nasty I talked. I couldn't talk to y'all. And that's the very first thing God dealt with me in my life. I mean, it was just like instantaneous. He just pulled it out of me like. But see, didn't really go for this God stuff. I really, really didn't like it. And I struggled with that. That has been my biggest struggle, was to come to terms with a God that I understand, a God that cares for me. And finally, that day came for me, and I was ready to turn my will and my life over. And since that day, it's like looking back and seeing myself sitting there, and I can see myself. I know exactly. I can't tell you the date of my first Al-Anon meeting. I know it's May because the envelope I got is dated May of 77, okay? But I know exactly the day I turned my will and my life over to God, because that's the day that really counts for me. Because it was like this hard shell just cracked, and it split open, and a new person started growing. And I opened my car door, and it was like it fell out, and I drove off and left it. And I've never forgotten seeing that. I just saw that, and I knew that things were going to be different. Well, I got to Al-Anon as often as I could. I got involved in Al-Anon as quick as I could. I had a lot of resistance at home. He was still drinking. He was not happy. He said I either had a lawyer or a boyfriend. We didn't have any money, so now I have a lawyer. And I said, I think I've swore off men for a while. Anyway, I've had enough of y'all for a little bit anyway. And I just want you to know that the way God works in this program, if we live by God's will, November the 25th, we'll be married 27 years. Who's the one that ought to get to heaven? Who's the one that ought to get the credit? I think he's got more to live with than I do sometimes. I think service work was one of the things that gave me the anchor I was looking for. I had never belonged anywhere. I'd never fit in anywhere. I'd always been this tall, loud broad that, you know, just laughed too loud and, you know, I just didn't fit in. And service work gave me a place where I fit in. People told me, you can do things. You can handle this. And for the first time, people thought enough of me to want me to do things. And I was so grateful. If they would have told me to count the rocks in the road, I'd have gone and done it. And so little by little, things began to unfold, and our finances were a mess. We owed everybody in the world except the mafia, and if I'd have been able to borrow from them, I probably would have. We owed, you know, Credit Way, Ritter Finance, credit cards, the IRS. He hadn't filed taxes in 7 years. That's always interesting when they seize your bank account. Yes, it is. I mean, what little bit we had, they got, you know. I mean, our finances were, it was almost insurmountable, I thought. The day he got sober, I think we owed about $100,000 unsecured debt. I mean, unsecured. I mean, I don't know where it is. 24 years later, I don't know where it is. But it was gone. And there was notes with our names on them. It took us 13 years to pay that money back. People told us, go bankrupt. He can't deal with the pressure. And we sat down and talked about it one day, and he said, I'll tell you what, I'll get up and I'll go to work every day, because I was an at-home mom, and we'll pay what bills we can, and we'll see how this goes, and if it gets too bad, I will go bankrupt. But I don't want to. I want to try. And I said, I'm with you. Let's give it a shot. I mean, how much could we lose? I mean, and 13 years later, we paid the last money back. I did a lot of inventory work on my finances, a lot. I had a lot of amends to make in the eighth and ninth steps. I had a lot. We had my parents, God love them, they're both deceased now, but they thought they would help us by giving us money. And I just want to tell you, if you're a parent, that doesn't work. Because there's not enough money in the world to stop a progressive disease. And I wish they had never gave us the first dime. I really do. Because it led to some heartbreaking things. And it didn't stop where we ended up, okay? Because we had to end there, because there was life lessons that we had to learn. Let me tell you, today when my credit card bill comes, Juanita pays it each month. I don't ever want to live like we used to. I really don't. In 1980, when I spoke here, I went home and I hadn't been feeling real well. And I said something to an Al-Anon friend, and I got to thinking, you know, I wonder. I went, oh no. Oh no, oh no, oh no. Oh, you know, the Al-Anon, oh. So I went to the doctor and he comes out and says, congratulations, Mrs. Puffenbarger, the rabbit just died. I was not real happy that the rabbit was dead. I wanted him to kind of wiggle him and see if it was, if he was this way or if there was some hope for him, and there wasn't. And I went to my sponsor's house right after that message and sat down on her couch and, you know, trying not to be nauseous and trying not to cry and trying not to be scared, and, you know, told her, and she said, and she put her tiny little hands on her tiny little hips and said, well, Juanita, you have an exciting spiritual adventure in front of you, don't you? And I won't tell you exactly what I thought. But it kind of went along the lines of, if you were sitting over here and you wanted to toss your lunch and you had $5 to your name and I told you this, I think you'd deck me. So we worked our way through that, and in May of 1981, I pushed, and I mean pushed, a 10.5-pound baby boy into this world. Praise God. You know, like Bill Cosby says, natural childbirth is where the mother has no drugs at all. The father, on the other hand, can have all he wants. Oh, so we had our son 19 years ago, and it really was a second chance for me, because so many of the things about the growing up years of the girls, Al-Anons don't have blackouts, but I had blank outs, turnouts, emotional brownouts, I don't know. But they would say things, do you remember when we did so-and-so? And I have no idea. And it was really a second chance for me to learn what it was like to be a mother with a program and with sobriety. And I'm so grateful for many of the things that that wonderful little spiritual adventure brought into our lives. Life has been an interesting journey. I had the mistaken idea that once he got sober, that he was going to make up to me for all the crap. Right. There's a word that a lot of the folks in the other program use, and it's a word that most of us Al-Anons do not find attractive at all, and that word is sacrifice. I was tired of sacrificing. I was tired of doing without. Like the tradition, I hadn't grown that far. I wanted money, property, and prestige. I'd had enough of the other way, thank you very much. I wanted it this way. And when he got sober, I really had to get a hold of this program in a different way, because I had expectations of a sick human being who was trying to get well that were so unrealistic. I don't know if God himself could have suited me. Okay? So this program and these 12 steps put the focus back on me. I was back over in the chair in my sponsor's house, and we were working on this again. And little by little, I got the focus off what he ought to be giving me. And I'll tell you one of the things she made me do. I used to hate the stuff she made me do. I really did. It just rubbed me the wrong way. She made me, for 30 days, get up every morning, put a smile on my face, and look at him and say, darling, what can I do for you today? I hate that.
that?
And I told her, I said, I ain't gonna mean it. She said, I don't care. I told you to do it for 30 days. You know, she'd make me write down the third step prayer and put it in my pocket, put it in my wallet, put it in my one day at a time book, the third step prayer from the AA book. And she made me do that for 60 days. I mean, it was stuff like that that turned my life around, because it got the focus back on the program, back on my higher power, and back on what I needed to be doing to clean up the mess I'd made of my life. Because let me tell you, I had plenty of territory to cover. I didn't need to go wandering off into his path. Al-Anon has been the journey back to sanity. It's been the journey back to a stable, I don't want to say normal because I don't know what normal is, but it's been the way back to a happy life, a joyous life. We've had problems. We've had deaths in our family. Our youngest daughter that I told you about that was born into such a terrible time in our lives began to experience real emotional problems, and probably at the age of 12 or 13 started running away from home. She got mixed up with drugs and alcohol. We ended up putting her in the hospital under a mental health warrant. And things that, as a mother, you just never ever think that you will ever have to do to your own child. And I know it wasn't doing them to her. It was really things that we were trying to do for her. But it was not a good time in my life. And I'll tell you, I doubled up my meetings. I really did. And I did more inventory work than I had ever done on my marriage relationships. I did a lot of inventory work on my relationship with my child. She ended up running away, being gone off and on 4 or 5 years. There's years I don't know where she was. We'd occasionally hear from her. She showed up. She was pregnant and unmarried and homeless and a real mess. And one night while we were at, I was delegate then, while we were at the Southeast Regional Service Seminar, she and another girl were involved in a murder in downtown Richmond. And I was 90 miles away and didn't know it until quite some time later. The people she was with are still out there, and they still know that she knows, and she has a 6-year-old boy. The heartbreak and the guilt that I felt as a mother was almost sometimes so overwhelming, I didn't even want to get up in the morning and face another day of what was going to happen next. There have been times when I would say, if we could just keep her alive till she's 18, and she hit 18, and I'd say, well, if we could just keep her alive till she's 21, and thank God she made 21, and she's 25 today, and she's doing a lot better. She's not in a program. To be honest, my sponsor told me to ask her to come with me this weekend, that it would do her a world of good to meet y'all, you know, to really get the exposure of program people, what it means to be like in a room full of people that really do care whether you make it or not, and really do care about your life. And she's not ready yet. She's somewhere else this weekend, and I understand that. But someday, you know, maybe I get to bring her, if not here, maybe somewhere. I buy her the book, and I give it to her, and I say, you know, today's reading was really good, and the courage to change. But most of the time I don't, because that really has to be up to God and the individual. I needed to go through what I needed to go through to get here, to be ready. I had to be made ready to receive recovery. And I know people tried to help me, but until I really did get sick and tired of being sick and tired, I didn't do it. And this program has been for me a source of spiritual renewal constantly. Just recently in reading some pages in the Courage to Change, I saw how there were like key words for the 12 steps that I had never really looked at in that way. And it was renewed again. I've seen something new. And this program continues to be new. And I'll tell you what, the theme, celebrate, there is no better place in the whole wide world than this program to celebrate. We have so much. The things that I thought were lost and beyond hope have been restored to us. Our finances have been restored. Our family has been restored. My daughters love me. We have a good relationship. I have 4 grandchildren. We have a lot of fun together. We do neat stuff. And it's because I learned how to celebrate life and recovery in this program. And I want to close, but I just want to read you one of my favorite little pages in The Courage to Change. This is June 2nd. And it says, "One gift of being a longtime Al-Anon member is that I have accumulated a large supply of healthy, positive experiences which remind me that my higher power is worthy of my trust. Although I have faced many challenges and difficulties over the years, my higher power has never let me down. This hasn't prevented me from having problems. If that had been the case, I would have missed out on life-changing lessons. I might not have learned the other way. Instead, I was given challenges and opportunities, but never more than I could handle. Even when I feared my circumstances were too much for me, help, guidance, and comfort were always there." And if I haven't said anything tonight that helps you, please don't give up on Al-Anon if this is your first conference or even your first meeting. Back home where I'm from, we say come to at least 6 meetings before you decide whether you need Al-Anon or not. And after 6 meetings, if you haven't found any help, we will refund your misery and you can go home and suffer just like you had been. Thank y'all very much. I love you. Thank you.